All right, I'm here with Daniel Hubble, and you're from the Windows Accessibility Group. Tell me about the group and what you do.
Sure. The Accessibility Group at Microsoft is actually a part of a larger organization called Trustworthy Computing. Mm-hmm. And in brief, we're the organization that really oversees the strategy for corporate-wide initiatives, things like security, privacy, online safety, environmental sustainability, geopolitical policy, and then accessibility.
Mm-hmm. And so today we want to talk a little bit about some of the accessibility features in Windows. These are things that, you know, a lot of times you see the accessibility directory off the start menu, and you might not go in there and poke around because you think, well, I probably don't need to use some of those. But there's some really cool things in there. Tell us a little bit about some of those.
Yeah, well, I've got a short list of things, and the key part actually is something that you just said about the accessibility control panel that used to exist in Windows XP. It turned a lot of people off. The language just wasn't right. My dad, who might have trouble with his vision, said, there's this little picture of a wheelchair. I'm not disabled. What do I need to... So in Windows Vista, we actually changed that. It's now the Ease of Access Center. And there's sort of a stylized recycling logo that we'll look at in a minute. And the whole premise was, here's a place where you can go to change all of your settings for personalization and accessibility to make the computer easier to see, hear, and use.
Yeah, well, let's dive in.
Yeah, so let's go. So the first thing that I always like to demo that is a new feature to Windows 7, which is my favorite feature as a person who demos for a living, is the new magnifier.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people were familiar with the magnifier on the mouse, and they were usually familiar with it because they'd accidentally hit that button and the little lens would come up and they'd be like, how do I turn it off?
Yeah.
Well, for Windows 7, we made it a lot simpler for people to actually get to. So the simplest thing to do, I'm just going to open a browser Explorer window. And from this point, instead of having to go into the control panel and turn something on, which has been the typical way we do stuff, the Windows team actually just created a hotkey for this.
Yeah,
which makes
I love
a whole
this.
Lot
yeah.
of sense. So being on the desktop, all I have to do is just hit the Windows key on the keyboard. I'm going to hit Windows key and the plus sign. And this is actually just going to zoom me right in on my screen. So here I've got now a magnified view of my desktop.
Yeah.
And the way to move around, this is the full screen mode. The way I can move around is just by pushing the edges of the screen around with my mouse.
Mm-hmm.
So if I want to move down, I just push down. If I want to move right, I just push off to the right side of the screen. So this is one way I can do that. Now, some people get disoriented because you may not know where you're at. Like if I zoom in a couple more times on here and I've got a great zoom in of a couple of icons on the screen, but I don't know where I'm at in the context of the rest of the page. There's a little watermark here that looks like a magnifying glass. And when I click on that, I can actually go to the Views menu and change this into, or I'm sorry, come down to this Preview Full Screen. And when I preview the full screen, it actually gives me a grayed out preview of the entire screen and a little box, which is the area that I'm going to zoom into. And when I pause, that's where it'll actually
Very cool.
zoom into. So it's a quick way for me to jump around the screen. Quickly.
And how do you get back out of here easily?
Easiest way to get back out of here is either Windows key minus to go back to 100%. Or when you have magnifier as the active window, you can, of course, just hit Alt-F4.
Nice. And I notice sometimes if I have to take a screenshot of something I want to be big, it looks better if I zoom in like that and take the screenshot there than if I took it and then tried to magnify it in like Photoshop or something.
Yeah, I mean, that's one way you could do it. Now, that actually leads me to the second way to make things larger on your screen. Most people don't realize this, but in Windows XP, there was a way you could change your font size, and it was kind of wonky,
and
you know, your fonts would be big, but the icons were still small.
Yeah.
So Windows 7, the team did a great job with changing the way that your font and DPI settings work in the way it renders icons. As you know, having a high monitor resolution is key to really have the crispness and the visual sense of your screen. A lot of people will just say, well, I'm going to change my monitor resolution to 400 by 600 so everything looks bigger.
Yeah, but not the best way. You want your native resolution.
You want the native resolution because you lose all the fidelity that those extra pixels are intended to give you. So the easiest way to find this, I go to the Start menu, and in the search box, I just type in font. And when you type in font, there's an item here that says make text and other items larger or smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And when you click on this, it's going to take you to this control panel for the display, and by default, it's going to be on this setting here, smaller, 100% default. Well, that makes sense, right? You want it to be at 100% resolution. I can change this to 125%, and in fact, if I go on the left and set custom text size, I can actually move this slider to all the way up to 200%. So I'm going to show 150 just for dramatic effect. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to click OK on that. And it's going to tell me that once I apply this, I have to log out and log back in for these to take effect. So I'm going to quickly log out and log back in. And once I log back in, you're actually going to see that now the icons on the screen here are much larger. There's my mouse, of course, telling me to install. The icons are actually much larger here on the bottom of the screen in the taskbar than they were.
Even the clock is a little bit bigger,
too. The clock is a little bit bigger. When I open that same Explorer window, you can see now it almost fills my desktop.
Yeah.
But I still have that native resolution, and you can see how beautiful it looks. And it's not all pixelated as if you had, you know, dumbed down your, the resolution on your screen. So that there is the high DPI settings, which I really like. And another thing that, if we pull up Internet Explorer, I just like to point this out. Now, looks like we might not have an internet connection here, but one of the, I can even show it to you on this screen, which is in the custom, in the magnification of Internet Explorer, you'll notice that it automatically defaulted the magnification of Internet Explorer to 150% because it recognized that that's what I set the system settings for font size.
Yeah.
So it's automatically going to change those settings across any application like Office and Internet Explorer that's really looking for, hey, what size do you want me to display this?
Nice.
Yeah. So it's a nice touch. So another type of disability that people have, aside from low vision, that we've wanted to address with Windows is, how do you type or how do you use a computer without being able to use a mouse and a keyboard? I mean, there's a whole range of disabilities that impact our ability to use our arms, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so some of those are disabilities. Some of those are permanent. Some of them are temporary. I mean, you could be out playing rugby. I don't know if you play rugby, but you could be out playing rugby on the weekends and break your arm.
If I did play rugby, I would break my arm.
You would break your arm, yeah, as would I. You lose the use of your arm, and how are you going to use the computer?
Yeah.
So what we have here is I'm going to come here, and I'm going to open WordPad. And many people who are familiar with the tablet PC on-screen keyboard, this may look a bit familiar, but it has a twist. We have an on-screen keyboard specifically for accessibility. And the way I'm going to get to that is I'm going to go to the control panel. I'm going to go to the Ease of Access Center that I mentioned earlier with this little stylized recycling logo. We'll click Ease of Access Center again.
Always skip this section.
And I'm going to turn these off so that the lovely lady doesn't keep talking to us. I'm going to start the on-screen keyboard. So once I click and I bring up the on-screen keyboard, now I can resize this keyboard to make it a little bit smaller to fit here in this space. Remember, I have the DPI setting set on high right now, so it's taking up more space on the screen. I've got WordPad open, and I have my on-screen keyboard down here. Now, I'm using the mouse to point here, but there are a number of different devices that we just don't have time to talk about today for doing input, everything from head tracking devices to scanning switches that will actually scan portions of the screen to do input. Today, for simplification, I'm just going to use the mouse to point here. And so I'm going to start typing, let's say H-E, and you'll notice that above the keyboard, there's actually a list of predictive text that has come up. So unlike the standard on-screen keyboard for like tablet PC, which has no predictive text, our accessibility keyboard actually is trying to provide you with that extra step of, I'm going to try and save you three or four clicks because you might have trouble inputting text.
That's awesome. Save you a little bit of time, and whatever you're typing in there, hopefully it's got the word in already.
Yeah, well, and it'll learn from you. So as you begin, so for example, I do demos a lot where instead of H-E-L for hello, I'll actually type in helicopter.
Yeah.
And after doing that three or four times, helicopter will be the first option that it gives me in that predictive text link. So it actually learns from you over time of what are the most common words that you use.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. So that's inputting text, which a lot of people just don't realize that this is here and that you can
And we actually use this in the studio quite a bit because all of our monitors for the cameras are touch screen. So
yeah.
We're always dragging out the on-screen keyboard.
Right. Well, and for a lot of people, you know, they're used to this new paradigm of phone keyboards,
yeah.
Right? And being able to type on your phone or on some sort of tablet device where you're actually using a touch device. And so this is sort of an important, you know, thing for people to know. It's like, hey, there's
yeah.
actually some tools here that give you some added advantage,
mm-hmm.
particularly with the predictive text. Now, on that note, another thing, this is actually not something that's new to Windows 7, but I find a lot of people don't realize that there's applicability to this. And I use the example of texting on our phone and using an on-screen keyboard where we're very linear in the way that you do shifted key commands. So
yeah.
if you do like shift P, you don't hold the shift key on the keyboard and hit the P, right? You hit shift P in order
yeah.
to get the capital P. So there's actually a whole generation of people that I've met, my, you know, kids' age and even you know, kids that are 5 or 10 years younger than me,
yeah.
that have grown up in this world of texting on an on-screen device.
Mm-hmm.
And they're used to this whole single shift paradigm, which I'm not used to because I learned typing the old-fashioned way.
Yeah.
But I've actually had this demand, hey, is there a way that I can set it so I just hit the shift key and then hit the key that I want? And amazingly enough, going all the way back to Windows 95, I think, we have something called sticky keys. Most people, again, like Magnifier, found it by accident.
Yeah.
And the easiest way to turn it on is to push the shift key 5 times.
Yeah. And this is how I usually see this, is I've accidentally held down a button.
You hold the button down and you push it. Well, what this does, once I turn this on, is that now if I want to type, I'm sitting here typing, I can actually hit shift P and you'll hear the little beep so it registers that, oh, I did it. But I could do control alt delete by just pushing the keys in sequence instead of having to hold them all together.
Nice.
So for someone who's used to that paradigm
someone who's broken their arm in rugby.
Broken their arm in rugby is a classic example. You can still do control alt delete because doing it with one hand, you know, I've tried it before and it's
a little difficult.
It's a little difficult. So yeah, sticky keys, another one of those things that a lot of people just forgot was in Windows.
And can you turn it back off by hitting the key 5 times?
Yes.
There you go.
There you go. You can turn it off. There's also a taskbar tray icon that comes up, and mm-hmm. you can actually just click on that and close it from there. You can
nice.
Just say close. So that is sticky keys. I'm going to undock the window real quick. Now, there's a whole slew of keyboard shortcuts in Windows. And
yeah.
The people out here in cyberland probably know many of them, because I know a lot of developer types in particular love their keyboard.
I love my keyboard shortcuts. You can take my mouse. I don't even need it.
Loving keyboards. So a lot of guys will probably know this, but in the general consumer population, I find that most people don't understand a lot of these keyboard shortcuts. And the one that I actually really love that most people don't think about is arranging windows on your desktop. So we have the arrow snap feature. If I grab my mouse and I can dock on the left, dock on the right, take it to the top and go full screen.
Yeah.
Everybody, I think, is well versed in that. A lot of people don't know that you can actually do that with a keyboard as well.
Yeah.
So I can do Windows key arrow left, Windows key arrow right, Windows key arrow up, and it's going to go full screen, arrow down, does minimize back to its original state. So a lot of people don't know that you can pop the windows around.
Yeah, I saw Reddit today. I learned on that not too long ago. So there's still people out there who need to pick this one up.
It's yeah.
very simple.
It's very simple. And in addition to that, all of the items in your taskbar, I don't know if you knew this one or not, they're all numbered.
Yeah.
So if I want to open Internet Explorer, I can just actually hit Windows 1 because Internet Explorer is the first item in my taskbar right
mm-hmm.
now, and Windows key 2. So you can actually set up pin your applications to your taskbar
yeah.
and quickly get to them.
Yeah, and one of the things with the Windows arrow key is if you're using two monitors, you can't dock to the middle of either of the monitor because, you know, it's not an edge.
Right.
So you can instead just use the Windows arrow and dock it to the things that you can't normally dock it to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like it's almost like an interim point that it
yeah.
recognizes. Yeah. So now we're talking a little bit about text input. So I think it begs for us to go to what I think is one of the coolest features in Windows.
I've loved this
Windows
for a long
Vista.
Time, yeah.
I'm going to unplug my mouse real quick, and I'm going to plug in my headset. speech recognition is by far, I think, one of the coolest Star Trek features that we have in Windows. Some people know that it's there and have never played with it and never seen it. There's a lot of people that are skeptical about it. In addition to that, I'm here to tell you that it's a really good, usable tool that we have. It's built in.
Yeah, it's one of those things that you just forget that it's there. And if you just give it a shot again, it's the kind of thing that's kind of handy.
It's super handy, and you don't have to use it all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, I turn it on if I know I have to dictate a long mail, if I have to write a long mail, I'll just plug it in and dictate it, and then I'll go back and edit.
Yeah.
You know, because it's a lot easier for me. I'm still of the Hunt and Peck variety of typist, despite the fact that I've been working in this business for way too long. And so for me, it's just an easy way to get text into the system. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to close WordPad real quick, just so we can demonstrate this. I'm going to come down to the Start menu. There's a couple of different ways to get here. You can go to the Control Panel to save time in the search box. I'm a huge proponent of the search box in the Start menu.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to type in Speech, and immediately at the top it says Programs, Windows Speech Recognition, and I hit Enter.
Mm-hmm.
That's another great thing from an accessibility point of view that they did in Windows 7, which is the search box in the Start menu.
Yeah.
For people that have disabilities, that have a hard time, that have different tools that they, you know, are using on the PC, this is a really convenient way for them to access the applications and programs without having to know where they're at.
Yeah.
Cognitive disabilities, in fact, are probably the most biggest beneficiary of that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to ask me to set up my microphone rather quickly. Peter dictates to his computer. He prefers it to typing and particularly prefers it to pen and paper.
And what exactly is that doing there? Is it trying to determine the... Are you doing like a training?
It's actually just calibrating the volume on the microphone so that it's... if the volume is too high, it gets distorted. If it's too low, it's not going to understand what it's saying. So believe it or not, it's actually taking sort of a voice sample.
Yeah.
And you'll notice when I started, the green bar was going almost to the top, up into the red area. And then as I continued to speak, it gradually came down as it was adjusting the volume, essentially.
Now, I remember back in the day on my tablet PC that I used to have to go in and do a lot of training to get accuracy. Do you still have to do that?
You know, I always recommend using. I always recommend using the training.
Mm-hmm.
We're obviously going to do this right out of the box. I mean, you see me. We're going through setup right now on this, I always recommend to folks to do the training because it will improve the performance.
Yeah.
But out of the box, you'll see. I mean, this has...
You don't have to.
You don't have to.
Yeah.
It's like tablet PC and the handwriting recognition.
Mm-hmm.
It does a fair job right out of the box, but if you go in and you write the sentences, the 50 or 60 sentences that it asks you to write, it just improves the performance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so now we are going to go ahead and we're not going to take the tutorial. And speech recognition is now started. Now, at the top of the screen, there's sort of a status window that's up there. Now, I can choose to turn that on or off. I like to leave it on so I know what's happening. I don't know if you can hear it here, but in my headset, I can hear it's giving me chimes when it understands and recognizes commands. There's three states that speech recognition is in: off, sleeping, and then listening. In the sleeping mode, it's actually listening for me to give it a command to wake up.
Yeah.
So at this point, I can actually hands off, you know, tie my hands behind my back, and I can use my computer. So if I just say, start listening. Start listening. So now it's listening. I can control my PC. Now, what I'm going to do, I have a mute button on my microphone that I'm going to use, so that it's not continually listening to me as I'm talking to you. So at this point, I can do more than just dictation. I can actually control all the aspects of my computer. So I can say, start menu, and it opens my start menu. Open WordPad, and it opens WordPad for me. So now I can take something and I can dictate. I can say, the quick brown fox, comma, jumps over the lazy dog, period.
Very nice.
So I have the sentence that it dictates, and that's the typical thing that most people think, oh, speech recognition is really only for dictation. There are a couple of things, actually, that I think are even cooler than this. I mean, this is impressive, but there are a few things that I think are cooler than this. One of them is something called mouse grid. How, if I wanted to resize this window, would you resize it using your voice? That's the typical question I get. So in this case, I'm going to say mouse grid, and it breaks my window into 9 quadrants. I'm going to call out numbers until I get down to a point, and I'm going to mark my endpoint.
So you're going to hone down on an area using these numbers.
Exactly. I'm going to go to the corner of this window. 9, 5, 4, 8, mark. So I've marked my endpoint, and now I want to say, where do I want this task to finish? 5, 5, 5, click.
Very cool.
And it's going to move my window in. So just a sampling of a few of the things that you can do with speech recognition.
So if someone wants to start using speech recognition, but they don't know what terms they can use, what's the best way to pick up what you can say and what you can do?
Obviously, the tutorial is going to be the ideal thing. I always say the tutorial is designed to teach you how to use it, not for it to learn how to listen to you.
Yeah.
If you're into speech recognition as we are, again, this was a right out of the box. You saw us go through the setup as we went into this. Fantastic tool for people. Again, built in. It's available in every SKU. So everything from Starter Edition to Premium and Ultimate.
And so do you suggest using a headset like that? I know one of the things that I like is having a headset when I do speech recognition that has a mute on it.
Yep.
It can make it easier so that you're not accidentally doing things.
My recommendations in using speech recognition are exactly that. Use a wired headset with a mute button, preferably one that has noise cancellation or sometimes referred to as digital signal processing or DSP. Yeah. I have a portable one because I travel a lot. Mm-hmm. So for me, I want something that folds up in my bag really easily. But you can get bigger ones. I know some people like the ones that they can actually use to listen to music and cover your ears. And
yeah.
So it's all about preference. But I say get a digital USB microphone, not one of the analog microphones with the standard mini plugs.
Yeah.
Digital signal processing and a mute button is definitely beneficial.
And can you use the microphone array on Kinect?
Currently, if people are out there using the SDK, there are a number of ways that you can use Kinect and the microphone array for commanding and controlling Windows.
Yeah.
I haven't specifically seen it working with speech recognition turned on. I have to believe that it's possible based on the integration that I know about.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So I would believe that would be true, but I haven't seen it work.
Cool.
Personally.
Good.
So good. Well, we talked a little bit about the Ease of Access Center a minute ago. And one of the things that I like to point out is most of us have family members who, as I was talking a little bit about the language of accessibility earlier, that just don't relate to the language. And so the Ease of Access Center, the quick key for this is the Windows key U, and that's going to bring up the Ease of Access Center, so I don't have to go to Control Panel.
So you can remember that with usability.
Windows key U, it actually used to be the utility manager in Windows XP, and it was sort of commandeered for the accessibility stuff, and usability is a great way to remember that. So there's a right underneath this main box, there's something here that says, not sure where to start, get recommendations on how to make your computer to use. And I get this question a lot. Well, I want to help my mom or I want to help my grandmother understand how to make their computer easier to use, but I don't know where to start.
Mm-hmm.
Here's where to start. You start here, get recommendations on how to make your computer easier to use. And this is literally a questionnaire that it's going to go through and ask you a series of questions. The first one is about eyesight. And just select the statements that appear to you. Now, these are real language sort of questions. Images and text on the TV are difficult to see even when I'm wearing glasses. Now, I can talk about vision impairments or being blind. My dad, again, is just not going to click those buttons. He's like, I don't have a vision problem, but I have a hard time seeing the TV.
Yeah.
Right? So that's, to him, it was like, oh, okay, wait, I can relate to that. And mm-hmm. it doesn't label him in any way. So I can go through this entire questionnaire. Pens and pencils may be difficult for me to use. Conversations might be here. Well, actually, we have a lot of background noise, so we'll do that in an environmental thing. And then let's see, I don't have any impairments there. And we'll leave those unchecked. When I click Done, it brings up this recommended settings list. And what this actually is it's taken settings from all over the system, provided a set of recommendations, and puts them all in one list. So I don't have to go. It doesn't say, okay, so go to the mouse control panel and do this, and go to this
control panel. Yeah, Grandma doesn't have to go to 15 places. Yeah.
So it's all in one place. I can then just click down. It says it recommends to make the focus rectangle thicker. It says to turn on the toggle keys. There's the opportunity for me to change my pointer size if I want. And so it just gives me a series of all of these options by default, and I can change them and customize them as I want, but I don't have to go find them.
Yeah.
And that's really the key thing here. And a lot of people just don't know that this exists.
Very nice.
The last thing that I want to show, I actually think that I use quite a bit, particularly if you use a dual monitor setup or even more, I lose my mouse.
Yeah.
All the time. I don't know if you have this problem, but I lose my mouse.
I have done that, yes.
Yeah. So in this setting, we're in the Ease of Access Center, and I make the mouse easier to use. You'll see this looks fairly familiar. This was taken and turned on to the other, was in the other recommendations that the wizard gave us. I'm going to come down here to the mouse settings. This is actually how I'm going to get to the mouse settings for this particular mouse. And of course, on the pointer options tab, there are a couple of different options for visibility. One of them is called pointer trails, and what this does is actually then creates sort of a tail behind my mouse, which just makes it easier for me to follow it on the screen.
Yeah.
I find that one a little disorienting, but some people actually really find it useful.
Yeah.
The one that I like is show location of the pointer when I press the control key. And a lot of this has been there for a long time, but a lot of people forget that it's there. When I click apply to this and I come up to the screen and I press the control key, it sort of gives me this radar boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
It helps me find my mouse. And again, using a small mouse on a dual screen monitor, I lose my mouse all the time. With a couple clicks of the control key, I can see where the little radar
symbol is. That's interesting. I didn't even know that was there. I mean, I've used the mouse pointer trails before.
Yeah.
But from the the 15-foot interface where I'm trying to use the computer that I've got hooked up in my living room, that'd be awesome. I mean, I could just hit the control key and I can see where it's at.
Yeah, and it's simple. I mean, it's a single key press. It's just it's unobtrusive. The pointer trails to me can be obtrusive because it's always
on. It's a little trippy.
It is.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, man, I've had a little too much to drink today.
Yeah.
So I like this one because it's a little less obtrusive, but still useful.
Very cool.
Yeah. And then the last one related to the mouse, this is another one that a lot of people just don't know exists. And I know we talked about the developers love their keyboard shortcuts and all of that. But for people that really do use the mouse, and I'm a mouse-driven sort of person, there's actually this command that's activate a window by hovering over it with the mouse. And again, a lot of people don't know that this exists. I'm going to click apply to this, and I'm going to shrink this window up, and I'm going to open another window here, and maybe we'll put an Internet Explorer window in the back of that, and we're going to put these windows up like this, and let's minimize this. So what this allows me to do is I can actually, as I just hover over a window, it's actually just taking, so instead of having to click to take control of the window, I can just hover over it. I don't have to go to the top of the bar to click to activate that window. I can actually just, once I move my mouse over a window, it automatically activates the window and I can start clicking on it to do what I need to do.
Very cool.
So,
well, thanks for showing us this today, Daniel.
My pleasure. Thanks
Very
for having
cool.
me over.
Can't wait to start trying some of these. And we're going to talk again soon. You're going to invite us over. We'll take a look at the usability lab over there, too.
Yeah, we've got an accessibility lab over in 27 where we talk a little bit more about some third-party solutions as well that you can add to your experience for accessibility to augment what we have in Windows.
Thanks for showing us this today.
Thanks.